Chapter 1. Stuff. My friend Dave sold stereos to make money for college. He told me that his typical customer fell into one of three categories: people who wanted to buy the best quality, people who wanted to pay as little as possible, and people who couldn't care less about quality or price. This last group was after something he called flash. Since the job could be really boring, Dave and the other salesmen came up with ways to entertain themselves, mostly by goofing on the customers. One of the things they liked to do best was mess with the guys who came in and pretended to know everything about stereo equipment. These guys often fell into the flash category. Here's how it worked. If Dave thought some customer was acting like a know-it-all, he'd immediately take the guy — it was always a guy, girls don't mind admitting that a salesman may know more about what he's selling than they do — and would show him the most expensive stereos. Then Dave would pepper him with technical language, most of it made up. "The bass response from this model has passed the Chester standards, tweaking in 5 pulse units at the lower frequencies," he'd say. Though, as far as he knew, there's no such thing as a pulse unit, and there are no Chester standards. Chester was his friend's mutt of a dog. Now, if the guy stopped Dave and asked him to explain, he'd bring him back to the well-priced, non-flashy stuff, and do his best to give the guy a good deal. It was like passing the jerk test. But if the guy nodded as if he already knew all about the Chester standards, Dave would let loose with a zinger. "Look," he'd say, "I can't tell you anything you don't know about what we sell. All I can do is recommend this model right here." He'd point to the piece of equipment with the most lights on it, which was usually very expensive, but not particularly good. "As I'm sure you've read, it's got the best LPD factor available in the market right now." And the guy would always buy it. While he was paying, another salesman or two would give him the thumbs up and say, "Good choice, dude. Excellent LPD factor." Look in any stereo manual or magazine, and you won't find any mention of the LPD factor. It doesn't exist. One of the salesmen made it up, and it stands for lights per dollar. Using it was a way of making fun of customers who were so shallow that they worried more about what stereo equipment looked like than how it sounded. Actually, that's not right. The LPD factor does exist, and you see examples of it every day. It comes with a handbag that cost 4 times what you really wanted to spend. It's a part of those jeans that are expensive because they carry the label that everyone wants to wear. The LPD factor is why a $5 trucker's baseball cap with a goofy logo sells like hotcakes for $60. Simply put, the LPD factor is the difference between what you buy because you need it and what you buy to impress other people. That difference can seem bigger and much more expensive when you're an adult, but it's something you'll come across your whole life. For me, the LPD factor kicked in when I was in 4th grade, and every kid at Ox Ridge Elementary School became obsessed with wacky packs. They were stickers sold in a pack with gum, kind of like Pokemon cards, but without the annoying TV show or the toys. The pictures on wacky packs were just dumb little joke versions of the packaging of everyday products. Instead of Band-Aids, one wacky pack sticker showed band aches, and instead of Cap'n Crunch cereal, they had Cap'n Crud, stuff like that. They were usually just gross enough to be funny to 10-year-olds, you know? As with most fads, like Pokemon, Snap Bracelets, and the Spice Girls, it's hard to explain afterwards why we went so crazy over wacky packs. The best I can do is say they seemed cool for a while, and having them made us cool. So we all bought as many as we could. We spent our allowances, or washed cars, or cut lawns, to actually earn the money we were blowing on not very funny stickers. Bragging about our collections and trading for the stickers we didn't have ate up most of our free time, and caused more than a few friendships to suffer. Wacky pack collecting wasn't a hobby as much as it was a contest. Wacky packs were popular for about a year, and then, overnight, they became very uncool. Binders filled with the stickers that took months to collect went from an honored place on the desk to a hiding place under the bed. You know that scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory where Charlie's math teacher asks the class how much money they've spent looking for the golden ticket hidden in a Wonka wrapper? Our teacher, Mr. Mack, did the same thing to us about a month after the wacky pack fad died. When we figured out just how much money we'd blown on stickers that we no longer even looked at, we were stunned and more than a little embarrassed.